content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Welcome. I'm Deborah Love for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is the Thanksgiving edition of Health Issues, bringing you information from respected sources about health matters that may be helpful for you or those you care about in consultation with your healthcare provider. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from a variety of sources that I'll name as we go along. This first article is from UCLA Health, and how appropriate. It's Thanksgiving, so what could be a better time to look at the health benefits of gratitude? Saying thank you is nothing new, but practicing gratitude, regularly focusing on the positive parts of your life, is about more than having good manners. It can be a powerful health habit. Research shows that practicing gratitude 15 minutes a day, 5 days a week, for at least 6 weeks, can enhance mental wellness and possibly promote a lasting change in your perspective. Gratitude and its mental health benefits can also positively affect your physical health. So, what are the health benefits of being thankful? You get the biggest health benefits of gratitude when it becomes habitual and part of your thought process. But even allotting some time each day or week to prioritize gratitude can be beneficial. Taking time to be thankful may, 1. Reduce depression. A review of 70 studies that include responses for more than 26,000 people found an association between higher levels of gratitude and lower levels of depression. But more research needs to be done to understand the association. Gratitude seems to reduce depression symptoms. People with a grateful mindset report higher satisfaction with life, strong social relationships, and more self-esteem than those who don't practice gratitude. But it's also possible that depressed people are less likely to practice gratitude. Most likely, there's a continuous relationship where gratitude lessens symptoms of a depression, allowing people to recognize what they have. 2, gratitude can lessen anxiety. Anxiety often involves worrying and negative thinking, typically about things that happened in the past or may occur in the future. Gratitude can be a coping tool for anxiety. Regularly practicing gratitude combats negative thinking patterns by keeping thoughts focused on the present. If you find yourself focusing on negative thoughts about the past or future, challenge yourself to find something you are grateful for now. It will break the negative thought process and return you to the present. 3, gratitude supports heart health. Many benefits of gratitude also support heart health, improving depression symptoms, sleep, diet, and exercise reduces the risk of heart disease. Several studies show that a grateful mindset positively affects biomarkers associated with the risk for heart disease. A 2021 review of research also finds that keeping a gratitude journal can cause a significant drop in diastolic blood pressure and force your heart exerts between beats. Having grateful thoughts, even if you don't write them down, also helps your heart by slowing and regulating your breathing to synchronize with your heartbeat. Gratitude can relieve stress. Stress triggers a fight-or-flight response in your nervous system. Your heart beats faster, muscles contract, and adrenaline pumps. But gratitude can help calm the nervous system. Taking a moment to be thankful causes physiological changes in your body that initiate the parasympathetic nervous system, the part of your nervous system that helps you rest and digest. Gratitude and the response it causes help bring down your blood pressure, heart rate, and breathing to help overall relaxation. Lastly, gratitude can improve sleep. People with an attitude of gratitude tend to pursue goals that keep them feeling good. A positive attitude promotes positive action. They engage in activities that support healthy sleep, such as eating well and exercising regularly. Practicing gratitude also makes you less likely to be stressed, anxious, or depressed. Three factors that affect sleep quality and duration. But what you do during the day isn't the only factor in sleeping well. Thinking positive thoughts before falling asleep promotes better sleep. And there's evidence that gratitude causes people to have positive thoughts about their life, social support, and social situations. So here are some tips that UCLA suggests for practicing gratitude. Many people think of gratitude as a trait, but if you practice it, focusing on the positive things in life can become a habit and eventually come naturally to you. The best way to form a mindset of gratitude is to slip it in throughout the day. You can incorporate more gratitude in your life by writing it down. Take time, take time either at night or in the morning to write down something that went well. Dedicate a notebook or journal to gratitude so you can reflect and remind yourself of those moments. Another trick is hitting pause. Many of us reflexively say thanks often. Next time you hear yourself say it, stop and pinpoint precisely what you are thankful for. Another tip, redirecting your thoughts. You may feel negative or frustrated during the day. When that happens, step back and shift your focus to a positive aspect of the situation. Lastly, sharing your gratitude. Send a quick note telling someone why you're thankful for them, or encourage your family to share something they're grateful for each night at dinner. And this is now Deb talking. We've made it a habit to go around the Thanksgiving table to share what we're grateful for, and there's no doubt it brings us closer together and has enriched our relationships. Now, turning to the Cleveland Clinic Health Essentials newsletter, I'd like to share something that was a surprise to me. It's called Tap to Tingle. What is ASMR? Only some people experience autonomous sensory meridian responses, but it can be beneficial to those who do. You're scrolling social media and stumble on a video. Maybe it's someone mixing paint or tapping their fingernails, chewing a hamburger mouth open into a microphone, even pretending to do their taxes on camera. You've strayed into the realm of ASMR. What's going on here, and who is it aimed at? Psychologist Susan Albers breaks it down. So what is ASMR? Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response, or ASMR, is a sensory experience triggered by certain sights, sounds, or sensations. It causes a pleasant tingling feeling in your scalp that travels down the back of your neck and throughout your body. Like getting chills or goosebumps, an ASMR response is involuntary. It's sometimes referred to as a brain massage or even a brain orgasm, though most ASMR fans consider the feeling soothing rather than sexual. What's interesting about ASMR is that it makes people feel both relaxed and excited at the same time, Dr. Albers says. It's a paradoxical reaction. So what causes this phenomenon? Scientists still aren't sure. The working theory is that it triggers some specific regions of the brain associated with relaxation. A 2018 study found that this type of content lit up regions connected to reward and emotional arousal. It also releases feel-good chemical messengers called neurotransmitters. These include endorphins, which excite you and boost your mood, oxytocin, which makes you feel warm and connected, and dopamine, which reduces stress and promotes calm. Dr. Albers says ASMR even changes your brain waves. Specifically, it increases the strength of your theta waves, which also tend to go up when you're focused or engaged in mindfulness exercises like meditation or prayer. So here are some ASMR triggers. While it's a deeply personal experience, research suggests some triggers are more popular than others. A 2018 study shared a list of action identified as possible triggers. They were, in order of popularity, people speaking softly, having your hair played with or brushed, whispering, close personal attention, getting a haircut, interaction with your face or head, tapping on hard surfaces, watching people do focused work, scratching sounds, water fluid sounds, lip smacking, and watching or listening to someone eating. As the list shows, not all kinds of ASMR stimuli are sound-based. Other common types of triggers are personal attention. These are videos that usually involve a content creator looking directly at the camera, speaking soft words of affirmation or care. The triggers can be clinical. These are videos that are often shot from the recipient's point of view. For example, a creator may role play an esthetician giving a relaxing facial, or as a doctor performing exam, or they can be tactile. The French word effleurage comes up frequently in ASMR research. It describes a light touch, like in the context of massage. Some common tactile ASMR triggers include being gently tickled with a feather or playing with slime. ASMR videos often include binaural sound, a sound recording technique that provides greater depth of sound. The idea is that when you listen through headphones, the sounds closely mimic real-life interactions. There's a lot of trial and error, Dr. Albers notes. Certain sounds and sensations are pleasurable to certain people and not to others. So you have to find the stimuli, if any, that you particularly respond to. So who experiences ASMR? Only an estimated 10 to 20% of the population experiences it. And research has shown some common characteristics of people who experience the phenomenon. A 2022 study found that people who have this sense tend to score higher than average on the personality traits of openness and neuroticism, Dr. Albers points out. In other words, the more anxious you are, the more likely you may be to have and enjoy the ASMR experience. On the other hand, she notes that many people can't stand this kind of type of content. You may be likely to find it overstimulating, annoying, or even upsetting if you have misophonia, a decreased tolerance to specific sounds, are a highly sensitive person, known as HSP, have autism spectrum disorder, or have attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So, does ASMR help? ASMR was only identified in 2010, so all research into it is fairly recent. Right now, it isn't an approved clinical treatment for any physical or mental health disorder, but many people use it to do things like relax and cope with stressful situations. It may boost mood. A 2022 study found that ASMR can decrease the feelings of depression. It's particularly helpful and healing if you don't feel motivated to do something active, because ASMR can be very sedentary, Dr. Albers says. It may improve sleep. The same study that looked at ASMR and depression found that ASMR videos may help relieve symptoms of insomnia. It may lower heart rate. Multiple studies have found that listening to or watching this type of content can help slow your heart rate, even if you're not sensitive to it. And it may relieve pain. Participants in a 2015 study reported an improvement in symptoms or chronic pain during and for a few hours after an ASMR session. It may also provide headache relief. And it may improve concentration. ASMR shares features with the concept of flow, which is when you feel deeply focused and in the zone. People with more triggers may be more likely to hit a high level of flow. Research is still in the beginning phases, but it's already clear that there's a reaction happening on a physiological level, Dr. Albers reports. Understanding it better could eventually lead to it becoming clinically recognized for a wide range of medical conditions. So are there any risks? There are millions of free ASMR videos online that you can explore anytime, day or night. But is it safe to do so? The upside of ASMR is that there are no negative side effects, Dr. Albers says. Still, there are a few concerns worth knowing about. One of those is unregulated content. Online videos aren't clinically tested or reviewed, so they may vary widely in terms of production and content, Dr. Albers says. You may want to be worried or think about immunity. If you tune to ASMR content too often, you may eventually become less sensitive to it. This is called habituation. And beware that it's not a standalone treatment. ASMR shouldn't be used as a treatment or a way to manage medical conditions like depression or insomnia. If you're experiencing these concerns, talk to a healthcare provider about your options and use ASMR only as a complementary therapy. Should you try ASMR? According to Dr. Albers, the only way to know for sure if you can experience ASMR is to try to expose yourself to lots of different triggers. If you take the time to uncover your triggers and find creators you enjoy, you may find that ASMR is an easy and entertaining way to build self-care into your daily routine. You know, as you look across the table at your Thanksgiving gathering, you may be wondering, who are these people and what do their genes say about me? That's kind of the gist of a question that was posed to Dr. Anthony Komarov, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. The question was, what's more important in determining my health, my genes or my lifestyle? He replies, they're both important, and although you can't do much about the former, you can do a lot about the latter. In addition to lifestyle, life circumstances such as income level and marital status also have a large influence. For the rare individuals who live to be 100 or older, or centenarians, genes appear to be the dominant force in determining longevity. For example, some centenarians are smokers, but they have genes that allow them to overcome smoking's adverse effects. As you might expect, scientists are trying to identify the protective genes that centenarians have. We know a lot about the adverse effects of specific lifestyle choices, like smoking, lack of exercise, and eating lots of processed red meat, as well as specific genes, like the genes that cause some families to have very high cholesterol levels. But you're asking a broader question. What is the relative importance of all lifestyle choices versus all of our genetic inheritance? A study published online February 19, 2025 by Nature Medicine address that question. Scientists at Harvard and other institutions around the world collected detailed information from hundreds of thousands of people. This included data about their genes, how rapidly their cells were aging, and the diseases they developed, as well as their lifestyle choices and life circumstances. For certain diseases, genes seem to have a stronger influence than lifestyle and life circumstances, those being dementia, macular degeneration, and cancers of the breast, prostate, and colon. For other diseases, lifestyle and life circumstances had a stronger influence. These included atherosclerosis involving arteries of the heart and brain, rheumatoid arthritis, and diseases of the lung, heart, and liver. Among the most important factors of lifestyle and life circumstances that adversely affected health were smoking, lower socioeconomic status, lack of physical activity, living alone versus with a partner, insufficient sleep, and mood disorders. It also mattered whether a person's mother was a smoker when the person was young, and whether the person's reported birth weight was greater than average. This remarkable study highlights the importance of both genes and lifestyle, life circumstances, in influencing a person's health. Despite remarkable new gene editing techniques like CRISPR, our ability to alter our genetic destiny is likely to be pretty limited for the next several decades. So it remains true that just as you don't choose your parents, you also can't escape the influence of the genes that you inherit from them. The recent study underlines the fact that our lifestyle choices can profoundly influence our health, for better or worse. Mitigating the negative effect of life circumstances, such as poverty and living alone, requires our society to invest in effective social support services. You know, the holiday season is now officially in full swing, and it's the time of year when it can be tempting to imbibe a little more than usual. So this article from Popular Science debunks three common alcohol myths. Humans have a long history with alcohol. We've been making and consuming it for over 10,000 years, about as long as we've had agriculture. That's a long time for people to come up with all kinds of ideas about the drug and how it works. So, not surprisingly, some of them are wrong. Here are a few common myths about alcohol debunked by scientific research. So, the order of your drinks doesn't matter. You've probably heard some version of beer before liquor, never been sicker, or beer before wine and you'll feel fine. The basic idea is that you should stick to one kind of beverage or drink different beverages in a particular order in order to avoid a hangover. The problem, there's no scientific research backing this claim. The National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism calls drink order as a cause of hangovers a myth. In general, the more alcohol a person drinks, the worse the hangover will be, they say on their website. This is true regardless of whether a person drinks beer, wine, distilled spirits, or a combination of these. Researchers at Witten-Herdecke University published a paper that looked into this specifically, conducting what may be the most German scientific study in history. They had groups of people drink beer and then wine, or vice versa, alongside control groups just drinking one beverage or the other. Then they invited participants for another session, this time with wine and then beer in the opposite order, and compared the severity of the hangovers. This resulted in plenty of hangovers, though the order of drinks consumed didn't have any real impact. That's not to say you can't predict who at a party is going to be hungover. The study helpfully states that, quote, the subjective signs of progressive intoxication were confirmed as accurate predictors of hangover severity, unquote. It also includes what is possibly the greatest sentence I've ever seen in a scientific study. This is from the author saying this. Multivariate regression analyses revealed perceived drunkenness and vomiting as the strongest predictors for hangover intensity. Unquote. Another myth, debunked, alcohol doesn't warm you up. You might experience a warming feeling after a drink. Many people do and enjoy it. But that doesn't mean alcohol actually warms you up. That feeling of warming is the feeling of heat leaving your body, which isn't ideal. Dr. Krishna Vakaria, an MD based in the UK, wrote an article explaining the effects of alcohol on your body temperature, stating that while flushed cheeks, sweating, and hot flashes make us feel warm, our core body temperature is actually dropping. There's research backing this up. A 2005 study at the Advanced Research Center for Human Sciences at Waseda University in Japan concluded that alcohol actually lowers your core body temperature. Participants drank either water or alcohol in a mildly hot room. Skin blood flow and chest sweat rate in the alcohol session significantly increased over those in controls 10 minutes after drinking, the study states. Deep body temperature in the alcohol session started to decrease 20 minutes after the onset of sweating and eventually fell 0.3 degrees centigrade lower than in controls. Which is to say, alcohol makes you feel warm by releasing the heat in your body. That heat is exactly what you need to preserve in cold temperatures. So drinking isn't a great way to stay warm. So much for those dogs with brandy barrels around their necks. Coffee doesn't sober you up. Alcohol is the second most popular drug in the world, behind caffeine. It makes sense, then, that there's a common myth about combining the two. The idea that giving coffee or any caffeinated drink can sober them up. There's no truth to this idea. Caffeine might make you feel alert, but it doesn't counteract the effects of alcohol. A 2010 study conducted by the Boston University School of Public Health had 127 participants randomly consume one of four types of beer: non-alcoholic, with or without caffeine added, and alcoholic, with or without caffeine added. Participants then attempted to drive a simulated car. The conclusion: the addition of caffeine to alcohol does not appear to enhance driving or sustained attention reaction time performance relative to alcohol alone. That aligns with the broader scientific consensus. A cup of coffee might make you feel awake, even after a few drinks, but that doesn't mean you're sobering up. Only time can do that. Speaking of time, that's all we have time for today in our Thanksgiving episode of Health Issues. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen next week. I'm Deborah Love, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. As always, I'd love to hear from you. That number again is 919-832-5138. As always, thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Happy Thanksgiving.